It's the Rally the Valley podcast presented by Town Place Suites by Marriott. I'm your host, Jonah Goldberg, and we're joined this week by UTRGV Assistant Athletic Director for Ticket Sales and Operations, Carlos Munoz, UTRGV Executive Vice President for Institutional Advancement, Kelly Scrivener, and Jack Ewing. He's the chair of the Athletics Hall of Fame Committee. Carlos, we'll start with you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Jonah. Thank you for having me.
Carlos, your job focuses much on ticket sale. Right now, you're out of tickets to sell for most basketball games. How does that change your role on a game day basis and on a customer service basis throughout this season?
We're going to have better customer service than we've ever had before. This is the time that we've had to train our staff who are the front lines that will be visiting the customers pregame at temperature checks at the gate to scan your tickets. Everything is just going to be able to be more personal in a sense that we can give more attention to each customer, make connections with those customers, reach out to them by the name.
One thing you've also done is you've really upped the level of communication this year. I know that you've gotten heavily involved in, for example, sending more text messages and a lot of back and forth communication directly with our season ticket holders.
That's right. We've been able to have a new service that we've never had before this season, and it allows us to now text our customers via our landline through a service called ZipWhip. It allows us not only to communicate any kind of updates about our game schedule, or just any kind of general game information, we can reach out to our season ticket holders. And actually, it's been pretty helpful because now we've included our staff and our student workers. So everyone's on the same page. When there's updates to the game, if you'd like to share about the live stream, we can now share that via text. So folks can make it to the game, and their season ticket holders or our staff, they can now click on the link that we're sending to them via their phone and then watch us from home.
I'm a season ticket holder and I can't make it to a game. Is there anything I can do with those tickets so they don't go to waste?
One of the options, Jonah, that we added this season was the charitable seating program. And the idea behind that program is that in a normal season, there could be 30 games for basketball and 30 games in baseball. You may not be able to attend all those games in the same weekend, or if there's back-to-back games, maybe your schedule doesn't permit. We've started a charitable seating program where we work with a local charity organization. And if you know that you're not able to attend the games, we can then put them into a pool, and then those will then be given to the charity, and then those seats can be utilized by a local charity here in town.
It's a wonderful program, and I'm really happy to see you all doing that. Talked a lot about season tickets, but there are some games in which you can get single game tickets, namely the Burt Ogden Arena Series presented by the City of Edinburgh. Had our first two games of that last week when the men's and women's basketball teams hosted Texas A&M Corpus Christi and beat Texas A&M Corpus Christi. The men's basketball team will host Grand Canyon at Burt Ogden Arena February 5th and 6th. What do I need to do to get the tickets for those games, and what's the experience like?
The experience was good. By downloading the AXS app, it allows customers to have their tickets without actually having to have a physical ticket. Their phone is the ticket. Folks can reach us via tickets at utrgv.edu. They can also give us a call or text us. My office line is 665-3747, and my colleague Tiffany Ochoa, who's amazing, her number is 665-3415. We're always available.
You're telling me I can text you on an office line?
Yes, you can text us on an office line as well as give us a call. That phone number will send to our mobile phones, so we're always available, and that's the cool thing. So when you reach out to us, you're getting us on our cell phones. We're here to help. We'd love to have your support.
So if I call your office number at 2 a.m, it'll go to your cell phone?
Yes. And what we do is we have some out of office supplies that we can set up. At the moment, we don't because we're currently selling a lot of tickets for Burt Ogden. And for the February game, we've actually got a few orders this morning. We do have out of office capability, so you may get a text from us if it's after 5:30, just letting you know that we'll be back in the office tomorrow to help you out.
Carlos, you're awake all night anyway. You've got a newborn. So you know what? You should be answering the phone at 2 a.m.
This is true. My wife will tell you that I'm constantly checking the phone for either report updates or text messages through ZipWhip.
Carlos Munoz, he's the Assistant Athletic Director for Ticket Sales and Operations. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Jonah. Appreciate your time.
The Rally the Valley podcast presented by Town Place Suites by Marriott rolls on. We're now joined by Dr. Kelly Scrivener. She's the Executive Vice President for Institutional Advancement at UTRGV. Dr. Scrivener, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So institutional advancement, what exactly does that mean?
We raise the money for the university and also work closely with the UTRGV Foundation that supports the university.
When you raise money for the university, where does that money go?
It depends on where the donor wants it to go. All of our donations are 100% donor directed. So if you say you want your gift to go to athletics, that's where it goes. You can even be more specific and say you want it to go to scholarships in athletics or a particular sport in athletics. Everything will go where the donor directs.
If I say I want it to go toward giving snacks to the broadcasters of athletics, is that a thing?
We can make it happen, Jonah.
Well, that's really amazing that I can give to anywhere and make what sounds like a significant impact on the lives of students, faculty, and staff here.
Absolutely. And it does make an impact here. More than anywhere, the students really need the support and our programs really need the support. So people are making an impact every day at UTRGV.
Is there a minimum amount of money I need to give to be able to make an impact?
Absolutely not. Every single dollar matters and is impactful.
Now, I know you've had a lot of success over the last few years, UTRGV now in its sixth year of existence. What kind of success have you had here at UTRGV?
In our existence, we've raised quite a bit of money. We have had success through the Becker College of Business naming. We have had success with Valley Baptist Legacy Foundation, numerous gifts from them, and also quite a bit of scholarship dollars, increasing our endowment levels.
You mentioned naming a school. Can I get something named after me? I'm thinking the Jonah Goldberg UTRGV Fieldhouse or something like that.
For the right amount, Jonah, we can make it happen.
Excellent. That's what I like to hear. Now, you've been making such a big impact here for a few years, and this isn't your first stop. Worked at Texas Tech, where you worked with Dr. Bailey, our current president. Is that a big reason why you're here right now?
Yes, best president in the country, and I'm very proud to work alongside him and for him and be a partner in fundraising with him. But also, my family is from Benavides, which is South Texas, and I have many relatives here, and so I love being here, and this is home to me. I love it, and I love the work we're doing here.
What's it been like watching UTRGV grow over the last few years?
It's been so rewarding to see UTRGV grow because I know that development has a hand in that growth. And thanks to our donors who give generously to our institution, that's what helps us grow. And so it's really rewarding.
Division Athletics Program, how important is it to have such a program here at UTRGV?
Well, it's really important and I look forward to the future.
Now, I know you are personally a big investor in UTRGV Athletics. Why is it important to you personally?
I believe in giving back and I really respect the work that our student athletes do and the work that our coaches are doing with those student athletes. So I've invested in UTRGV athletics and I'm proud to do so.
So I see you a lot at UTRGV games. So what are some of your favorite things to scream?
I try to be a good sport and just yell words of encouragement.
Well, we love words of encouragement and we love the job that you're doing here. Dr. Kelly Scrivener, Executive Vice President for Institutional Advancement. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Jonah.
The Rally of the Valley podcast presented by TownPlace Suites by Marriott rolls on. We're now joined by Jack Ewing. He's the chairman of the Athletics Hall of Fame Committee. He is also a member of the Athletics Hall of Fame. He played baseball here in 1975 and 1976. Jack, thanks for joining us.
It's great to be here.
So Jack, when you were here, you played on a couple of the most successful teams we've had. The 1975 team went ridiculous, 63-7. Like if you said that about a team today, nobody would believe you because one, that's too many games. And two, that's just an incredible winning percentage. How did you all do it?
Well, it is incredible. And I don't think we really realized it till the season was over. Our opening series, we went up against the University of Houston and we split 2-2. So, you know, thought, oh boy, here's a 500 year, got on the bus and rode back to Edinburgh and was wondering what's going on. You thought we had a better team than 2-2. I personally pitched one of the games and lost it. That was one of those infamous games where coach came out to the mound and told me, he says, Ewing, you know, this is the first time I've ever pulled a pitcher because of his fielding. I'd made a few fielding errors and he pulled me out because I was killing the team with my fielding. We were wondering what's going to happen. I didn't think I'd ever pitch another ball game. I thought after that, I'd probably sit the bench for the rest of the year. We came back and I think we had about a 20-game winning streak before we lost another game. We really became believers in what we were doing and had all the confidence in the world. And then I think we lost a game and then we had another 20-game winning streak. So prior to going to the playoffs, we were 61-5. When you lose two of your first four and then you only lose three more games over the next 60 games. You got some pretty good winning streaks in there. It was phenomenal. It was a magical season, but I don't think we really realized it. Or at least I didn't really realize it until it was all over with. And looking back and saying, wow, 90% win rate on 70 ball games. Pretty incredible. We set the NCAA record for the most wins in a season at that point. I know one of the teams in the 80s from Pan American won 64 games, but they played 10 more games than us.
Look at your career. And during that 1975 season, you threw a one-hitter against Texas A&M and a two-hitter against Indiana. Those are some name-brand programs that you were dominating there, Jack.
It was pretty cool. I was fortunate. I was able to pick up victories against Baylor, TCU, A&M, Indiana, and some other team. I was able to claim victories on 13 of them that year. It was really very intimidating for me. I came out of junior college, a little school in East Texas for high school, and to be playing teams like Baylor, TCU, A&M, and so forth. And I was so nervous, and I just thought, this is a dream come true to go play against these teams. And my desire at a junior college was to go to A&M. I mean, I just wanted to be an Aggie, just really bad. And when I left Temple Junior College to go home for the summer, I stopped off at A&M and had my last little visit with them and talk and what they were going to offer me and so forth. And we didn't come from a family with means. So if I was going to play ball, I had to have a full scholarship, and A&M was going to offer me just a partial. And so I was really disappointed when I was driving back to Nederland after that visit. And then Coach Ogletree called me 3 or 4 weeks later and offered me a full ride. And Coach, I jumped on that because I needed to. And of course, with Pan Am's history, I was glad to go. But it was bittersweet when I threw the one-hit shutout against A&M, because that was a week before we went to the playoffs, and A&M was going to the playoffs at a different regional than us. So this was really an unscheduled five-game series we had with them, both as tune-ups. And to go look at Coach Chandler, who was the coach at the time, and go throw a one-hit shutout in his face, that was such a bittersweet moment, because he knew I wanted to go there, and he knew I wanted to go there very badly. To come over and play at Pan Am and one-hit shutout him, that was probably one of the sweetest victories I ever had. And then, of course, I was able to pick up a victory in the playoffs against South Alabama, and that was an elimination game, so it was very fortunate we won that one. But that was a great win also, because South Alabama was rated number one in the nation till about probably the last month of the season. They had a record similar to us up through till about the last 3 or 4 weeks of the season. Then they lost a few. That was a nice win also.
You pitched 12 of your 23 career complete games in that season. 23 complete games in 2 years. That probably doesn't really happen anymore. I can think of one pitcher that's come through this program in the last few years, Sam Street, who could have probably matched that. He seemed to throw a complete game just about every time out, but it's not really as normal a thing anymore. So how are you able to finish every single game back then?
One of those things you look back on and don't realize what you did until after it was over with. I just had this thing in me about being in shape. Coach Ogletree, he wrote a book chronologizing all the years that he coached at Pan Am. And he has in his little book, I'd run 3 miles before I'd even pitch a game. I ran, I don't know how many miles a week. And then I did all the other exercises that I should be doing. And I never got tired. I was probably stronger in the latter innings than I was the first inning. Now, keep in mind, we only played 7-inning games back then. So, you know, we didn't play 9-inning games. So that has a lot to do with it. I only pitched, I think, in 2 extra-inning games. And I threw a complete game with the extra innings. But I was just really in really super shape for this, and I just didn't fatigue. Had a good arm. I didn't get real sore, took good care of it. When I look back on it, I say, you know, that's a lot of complete games.
So what did you go on to do after graduation, and what are you up to now?
I met my wife at the start of my senior year. We got married after I graduated. Because of her and realizing that my future wasn't in baseball, just opted not to try to even play pro ball. We got married and I went to work. My first job out of college, a man hired me to play handball, paid me $1,000 a month, which was kind of the going rate for all the business majors at that time. Was $1,000 a month salary back in 76. And he hired me to play handball and paid me that to play at his beckoning. He had a court at his office and we played 4 or 5 times a week. And it didn't matter if it was 10 in the morning or 4 in the afternoon or 10 at night. I was on call, and that was my first job. Of course, there was not a lot of future in that. And so anyway, so I went back to Pan Am and I took accounting classes. I had a physical education degree. I guess they'd call that kinesiology now. I got enough accounting classes to take the CPA exam, passed the CPA exam, and then came to work at a CPA firm in 1977. And that's the CPA firm I'm at now. And I got there as a snotty-nosed kid, didn't know anything. And now I'm just an old man that didn't know anything. Been here now for 43 years. By then, you put your name on the door. It's been a good ride, but I've been doing this. Of course, my wife and I had 3 kids, and now we have 8 grandkids. Been here in McAllen all these years, and the Valley's my home.
You've been pretty involved with UTRGV Athletics over the years. Most recently, you became the first member of the Varsity Club, which is a new organization to help bring all the alumni together. What drove you to become the first member, the first lifetime member, no less?
I had graduated from Pan Am, and Pan Am enabled me to have a good job. Playing ball at Pan Am opened up a lot of doors for me. My name was kind of known down here. Just people would say, oh yeah, you played at Pan Am, that kind of stuff. But I really took a hiatus from baseball and Pan Am sports. I mean, I might show up just every now and then, but I just kind of, whatever it was, I just walked away from it. And I can't really tell you the reason why, but I just did. Maybe just got involved with my wife and having kids and my job. Really can't pinpoint that. Of course, I always stayed close with Coach Ogletree. I always had great love for him. But it wasn't until just a few years back when they had the name change from UTPA, the Bronx, and go over to the Vaqueros. That kind of stabbed me in the heart a little bit, because I was just a die-hard Bronc. I mean, that's what I am, as a Bronc. And so that kind of drove a little wedge as well. And then finally, I just woke up and said, you know, God's given me a lot of talent. He's given me a lot of opportunity to succeed in the community financially and otherwise. And I remember when I was a kid, and when I say a kid, when I was in college, and how difficult it was. Money was not very prevalent, not for any of us. And there wasn't scholarships for everybody. Some of them really had to pull in a double job with playing ball, which was about like a 40-hour job right there. Back in those days, we really weren't time restricted, probably like they were now. And then they would go and they'd be working at Pizza Hut or something of that nature. I said, you know, these kids need more. If they love baseball like I did, they need to be able to focus more on it. And so I just wanted to get more involved. And of course, then I got inducted into the Hall of Fame. And so that kind of spurred on even more interest. And so I wanted to be the first member. I want to be out there to where someone who is from the old Bronc regime, I want to be able to tell them, hey, I am too. You know, that's where my first love is. But these kids are kids who want to play ball just as much as we want to play ball. Doesn't matter what name is on their shirt. They should have every opportunity we had, and even more so. And if by being that first member, you know, I just want to let them know that I was standing in line waiting to support the Vaqueros, and hopefully set an example that other former athletes who may harbor a little bit of bitterness about the whole situation would maybe come around and realize it's not about us. Yeah, we had our day in the sun, and now it's time for somebody else to have their day in the sun. And if we can help them do that, because there's no doubt that what happened at Pan Am built a tremendous foundation for all of us to leap from. And all of us can look back and look at those days of being 63-7 and beating top teams all over the country and just playing under that environment. It's incredible. Why should we hold back and penalize kids who want that same opportunity? So I felt honored to be a part of the whole program and plan to be a part of the program from here going forward.
You've become quite the leader. You've been involved in the Athletics Hall of Fame Committee for a few years now and recently elevated to the chair of the committee. Tell me about being so involved in that Hall of Fame Committee and if there are any plans that you want to let us all in on.
I was quite honored to be a member of the Hall of Fame Committee, and it really was more of an honor because I was asked by you, Jonah, and I don't know who else might have been involved in it, but you made the phone call to me. Coach Ogletree took ill, and he was on the Hall of Fame committee, and he became to the point where he couldn't really participate anymore. And not that I replaced him by any stretch. I felt honored to be able to kind of sit in his chair, in a sense, and carry on the legacy that he really brought to the baseball program. And there's other great coaches and athletes that are in the other sports. Of course, my focus has always been baseball because that's what I did. But there's some other great coaches and athletes, and I just wanted to see that happen and bring these boys along, girls along, and try to inspire them to do the best they can here and maybe become part of the Hall of Fame. And I wanted to see about making the Hall of Fame really maybe bigger than it currently is with whatever I could bring to the table. And we're doing some things currently. And I think we got some things on the drawing board that are going to be exciting. It may not happen overnight, but at least we're getting the ball rolling on certain areas. And I feel good to be a part of that as well. It's an honor to be with the program, to help with my time and financially, and just not that I'm going to be living vicariously through this, but it's really a neat to be close to the program and know you're still part of something that's much bigger than yourself.
You've mentioned Coach Ogletree. Coach Al Ogletree was the baseball coach here for 30 years, won about 1,100 games, one of the winningest coaches in NCAA history. Can you tell us what he meant to you?
I hope I can do this without crying. He was a phenomenal man. He was the kind of man that could get the most out of the talent that was there. He spent less time probably teaching me how to pitch formation or how to grip the ball and all that kind of stuff than he did just working in my brain and convincing me that I could be the best that I could be and exceed probably my own expectations. And I would say if you could interview all the ball players, especially all the ones that showed up for the induction of our team a couple of years ago, they'd probably all tell you that they went out every single day and we played for Coach. It's crazy how we wanted to please that man and we wanted to win for him. He knew how to manage us. He knew how to get the most out of us. He knew how to get in our brain and in our hearts and get the very best out of each one of us. And I think it showed with our record. I don't even care if you are the number one team in the nation. You don't beat everybody. You have an off day someday. We just didn't have off days. And I think it's because we went out there, chip on our shoulder to win for Coach at all costs. He's just an incredible man. And I was fortunate enough to visit him. Every week I went and saw him for the last 3 years of his life. He was in bed. And I saw him the day before he died. And it meant a whole lot to me. He really did.
Hall of Famer Jack Ewing, thanks for joining us.
Well, it was great to be here, Jonah. And thank you. And thank you for all the work you do. And thanks for reeling me in a few years back.
This has been the Rally the Valley podcast presented by Town Place Suites by Marriott. To check out archived episodes, visit goutrgv.com/podcasts.